Hey everyone, I'm Josh Olson. This is my YouTube channel. Today, I have a special guest. He was born and raised in Ohio. He currently lives in Atlanta. He's been an avid origami student for over 50 years. Today, I have a conversation with Dr. Robert Lang. Robert, how are you today?
I'm good, Joshua. I do want to mention that I live in Altadena, which is in California.
I was
raised in Atlanta, Georgia, but I came out to California a long time ago and have been in either Northern or Southern California ever since.
Awesome. So how's the weather in California?
It's pretty nice. We've been having a lot of May gray, predecessor to June gloom, but today is bright and sunny and windy. In fact, I just had a ladder blow over from the Santa Ana we get.
So talk to me. How did you get started in origami?
When I was a kid, I liked to do things with my hands, and I found a book of crafts of various sorts, and it had a few pages of origami instructions in it. And so I gave that a try and found that it was really fun, and so I just kind of stuck with it. My parents helped by buying origami books for birthday and Christmas gifts and the like, and that just sort of fed the obsession.
And you've been doing it for 50 years. What does it mean when they recognize you as like one of the world leaders in origami? What does that mean to you?
Well, it's certainly fun to hear. I do the origami for the fun of origami. So hearing about the reputation is extra nice, but it's not the motivation for doing it.
So it's purely just a hobby for you?
No, it's far more than that. It started as a hobby.
Uh-huh.
When I was a kid, it was a hobby. And even when, during my career in working in lasers, it was a hobby, but a very passionate one.
Mm-hmm.
I was deeply involved in. But in 2001, it became my livelihood. So I've been a full-time origami artist and consultant now for the last 20-something years.
And you have designs all over the world. What is that like? That just sounds super cool. Just to have like your own artwork in different places. Like, do you go to these places and visit and look at the artwork, or?
I do if I can. Very often when there's been museum exhibitions that include some of my work, the museum will bring me out to do lectures and workshops in conjunction with the exhibition, and then I get a chance to see the exhibition, and of course that's also really nice to see it in the context of a lovely museum and in, with the presentational structure that a museum brings, as opposed to my studio. It's just sort of stacked on shelves and corners here and there.
And what would you say your favorite design is that you have displayed?
My favorite design, it's always changing. My favorite is usually the most recent thing that I worked on. And sometimes my favorite thing is not a physical folded shape, but it's more of an intellectual accomplishment, like a solution to a math problem, or even a partial solution to a math problem. I'd say my most recent design, something you'd look at and say, "Oh yes, that's origami," is a bird that is posted on my website, and I'm pretty fond of that. And I'm using its structure as the basis for further bird designs. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I'm really fond of and sort of almost obsessed with is a concept that applies to how one designs origami that involves expressing it in a four-dimensional space. And of course, you can't even look at that. It can only be visualized in a very rough mathematical way, but it seems like this four-dimensional space makes it possible to design certain classes of origami shapes. So I'm intrigued both by the possibilities of improving, of getting new designs that I hadn't been able to do before, but also at the connection, at the purely mathematical connections between you know, this abstract mathematical concept of 4D space and the very down-to-earth practical notion of a physical 3D folded object made from paper.
Wow, that's so cool. And how long did the bird take you to make?
Oh, I worked on the design off and on over a period of several weeks, and I folded a couple prototypes also over that period. So that's probably the whole time. When we ask how long an origami design takes to make, it's hard to give a definite answer, both because if it's something I'm folding for my own enjoyment as opposed to a commission, I will take lots of time. I'll dawdle, I'll fold it a couple times, set it aside, come back to it, you know, and so the calendar time is a lot longer than the actual intellectual time. But there's also the fact that this design builds upon iterations of ideas and folding and notions and design concepts that stretch back years into the past. So in a very real sense, one could also say it took decades to design because decades ago, I didn't have the knowledge and understanding that I needed to design what I designed just now.
That's so cool. And what was, do you remember what your first one was? Like when you first started, what was your first? Because I remember like in school, we used to make like, I don't know if it's considered origami, but like paper footballs. And then those little things you use on your fingers.
Yeah. So the things on the fingers is a very old design. It goes back into Japan, also in Europe, called cootie catcher or salt cellar. If it's turned over so that the pockets are upward, it's called a salt cellar. And certainly that was one of my very early designs. The craft book that I learned from had four figures in it. And so I remember what those were. I don't remember which one came first, but there was the traditional frog, the traditional flapping bird, a model called the talking crow that's made from the cootie catcher, and then a spider that I haven't actually seen very often in books of traditional designs, but it's basically made by taking the base from which one builds the frog and cutting each leg in half. So instead of having four, you now have eight, and then use that to make a spider.
Oh, wow. That's kind of cool. And what's the one that takes you the longest? The product that's taking you the longest?
The fold that took me the longest in calendar time was a cactus. And it's on my website. And it was from the time I started folding the paper to the time I finished folding was a total of about 7 years. But of course, that wasn't 7 years of continuous folding. It was fold a little bit at a time, set it aside, come back to it, set it aside again. And the reason it took so long is this cactus is covered in hundreds of spines. Mm-hmm. So it's, and the idea I had, the reason I wanted to do a cactus, people had done cacti before, but never with actual spines. And I wanted to do one that was really spiny like a real cactus, but each little spine had a pretty complicated folding process. And so the whole thing was just very, very tedious and repetitive.
Oh, wow. So this is not the only thing that you do. You've done a lot throughout your career. You actually graduated from Stanford University, correct?
That was where I got my master's. I got my bachelor's from Caltech and my PhD from Caltech. But in between those two, I got a master's in electrical engineering from Stanford.
I know you said it was a hobby, like, early on, but going to college, did you have a specific path? Like, was origami the path, or was there a different path?
Oh, no. The path was scientific engineering. My bachelor's work was electrical engineering. That was also my degree from Stanford. But by that time, I was already quite interested in lasers and optoelectronics. And so when I came back to Caltech for my PhD and switched to applied physics, the focus on lasers and related optoelectronics. And that became my career for the next 15 years after graduation. But one of the things that college played a big role in my origami evolution, because going to Caltech, which is a very hard place, it kind of revved my brain into a higher gear than it had ever been revved before, you know, just to keep up with all the brilliant people around me. And that, I think, rev up also got into my origami. So it revved my origami up as well. And origami throughout high school had been kind of an off and on hobby. I was interested, but I'd go periods of time without doing anything with it. But at Caltech, it really revved up again, and I focused on trying to develop new designs and designs that were unlike anything that had been done before. And that higher gear of origami then persisted for the rest of my life.
Oh, wow. And how would you say college, how does it factor in now? Like I know you said engineer, like, can you take some of those things that you learned in college and apply them to origami?
Oh, yeah. Can and have. And I think that played a big role in me getting to the place where I am now in the world of origami. Because particularly in graduate school, I started getting deeply involved in theoretical modeling, where you're trying to describe some physical phenomenon, like a laser, and you build a mathematical description of it using the tools of mathematics, equations, and all of that. And if you can build a good mathematical description, then you can use the tools of mathematics to solve the equations you've set up and learn something about the system you're studying or accomplish the design goals that you're after. And it felt to me like origami was subject to the same sort of strict and describable rules that lasers and physics and electrical engineering and all of that were, and that one could apply the same approach to origami. So I started trying to do that, trying to describe origami mathematically with the goal of using math to design origami that I wanted to design, but it wasn't able to do purely based on intuition. Intuitive understanding of how the paper behaved. And that actually worked out quite well. I ended up developing some mathematical theory and wrote some papers about it. I wrote a computer program that was able to design very complex origami. And that being able to make that connection between folding and kind of an engineering mathematical type of description of it also then led me into the world of consulting, of applications of folding to engineering problems, and also just being a part of what is now a very robust and widespread world of origami, math, science, and technology all sort of mixed together.
Oh, wow, that's so cool. So you said you went like full-time in 2001. What would you say like your big break was, like when you knew that you could be full time in origami, like this could be your career for the rest of your life?
It happened, that moment happened probably 2 or 3 years after I made the transition.
Okay.
So what happened was, or the trigger for this was, I had, for many years, I had the idea of writing a book about how to design origami. I'd written 6 books about recipes. Here's how to fold 20 different objects, step-by-step instructions. But what I felt like I could also teach people how they could design their own origami. And, you know, not just follow my instructions, but they could come up with something new for themselves. And I wanted to write a book about that. And I tried off and on for about 10 years and didn't really make a lot of headway. And then and came to the conclusion that that was something I couldn't do in little bits and pieces on nights and weekends, which is how I've written all my other books, that I really needed to focus just on that. Mm-hmm. And so once I had that realization, I kind of had the choice. Do I spend full time to write that book, or do I continue down the path that I was on in of being a manager in a company that made lasers? And what was more important to me? And I decided what was more important to me was that book. I figured there were lots of people who could do technical management in a laser company, but I felt like I was the only person who could write this book that I envisioned and that I needed to. So I quit my job to write that book. That was the trigger. But then as I started working on the book, I also started trying to follow up on various leads that I'd never really been able to follow up on because I always had a full-time job, and invitations to lecture or teach or do workshops or consult. And so I did that too. And after a couple of years, I realized that the origami work was enough to be a full-time job and was a lot of fun. So I really was never going to go back. And so that's been the case. So now for 20 years, I've been full-time origami, and what I have done over that time has varied. Sometimes it was lecturing or teaching or consulting or working on art projects from which I got royalties. It's kind of a big mismatch, but altogether it's been enough to keep me busy and occupied and very satisfied.
That's awesome. So do you enjoy, I know you've mentioned it a couple of times, do you enjoy teaching and lecturing younger people?
I do. A big part of my work pre-COVID was traveling around and lecturing, and I really enjoyed that a lot. For the last year, I haven't done any of that. Yeah. A few online courses. I've done some online classes, but it's just not the same as teaching in person. And so I am looking forward to, with the relaxation of restrictions and ability to travel and vaccinations, of being able to get back to doing some of the teaching and lecturing.
So if for someone getting started, maybe they want to do origami, what would you say a good starting point would be?
Really, it's find something that's fun. And there's just a wealth of resources out there now. Back in the 60s and 70s, there were just a handful of origami books. And pretty much your only choice to learn origami was to work from a book. And while I think some of the best origami designs now are still only accessible via books or magazines, but there's many, many more books. And there's also a wealth of information on the internet, both downloadable diagrams, which are step-by-step instructions like you find in books, but also quite a few videos showing how to fold. And videos, in one way, they're quite nice because you can actually watch a fold happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a book, you see before and after, but your brain has to figure out how to interpret the symbols and arrows to make that change. But I would actually encourage people, even if they start from videos, which is a very low barrier to entry, just, go under terms in a search engine, you can find tons of origami instructions. But I encourage people to also try to work from books, because the challenge of going from step by step and sort of filling in the missing parts in your brain helps your overall understanding of origami and your overall folding ability, and will enable you to be a better folder. And if you ever get to the point that you want to design, definitely help you become a better designer.
That's so cool. That's awesome. There's a couple of things I want to ask you about. Recently you were on a TV show, To Tell the Truth. You mind telling the story about how that came about and how that happened?
Yeah, so the producers called me up from out of the blue. I have footprints on the internet, and so they probably were looking for people, and called me up and said they'd like me to come on the show, and they wanted me to be one of their the real person, you know, the person is one of the three people who's supposed to be an origami artist.
Uh-huh.
And so I did a little online meeting so they could see what I look like and how I interact, and gave them my background and told them where I came from and so forth. And then a few months later, they called me back and said, well, we'd like you to be an imposter because we noticed you have the background of working at JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, NASA. And we have a contestant who's the Mars Kitect, and we'd like you to be the Mars Kitect imposter. So would you consider that? And I said, I'd consider it, but I didn't want to give up my chance to be known as an origami artist. I'd much rather people know me as an origami artist than as someone who can lie about being a Mars Kitect. Oh.
That's true. Yeah.
So then they came back and said, well, how about this? You'll do both. And so that was what led to the show. So the first segment were the three of us trying to convince this panel that we all were the Mars Kitect. And I was very pleased to see that two out of the three panelists thought I was the real Mars Kitect. And then in the second segment, after the reveal, they came back and said, well, one of those two remaining people is actually an origami artist. And I was pleased again that two out of the three picked the other guy as the origami artist and not me. So I feel like I was on the winning side both times.
Yeah. So, but do you get to interact?
The very funny thing, one of the reasons I was able to do the Mars Kitect is I have consulted on a lot of space applications.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew enough about space, also helped by a lot of tidbits that Vera Mulyani, the real Mars Kitect, told us about the project she was working on. But I knew a fair amount about space and applying origami to space. So several weeks after the show aired, I got a call from the Mars people saying, would you talk to us a little bit about origami? And so it actually led to a little bit of a real professional interaction.
Oh, that's awesome. So do you get to interact with the panelists or the judges beforehand or no?
No, that's the thing. The two imposters and the real person, we spent quite a bit of time with each other and with the producers, basically helping train the imposters to be good imposters, mm-hmm. and also helping train the real person not to give it away that they're the real person. But the panelists didn't get to see us at all until we walked out on stage.
Oh, wow. And how long does the show take? Is it like 1 hour, or does it take a lot longer than what it shows?
Oh, the show runs for an hour, but they have something like five or six segments in it. So each of our segments was only about 10 minutes. And they did a little editing of, I'd say, maybe the time we actually spent with the panelists and them interrogating us was maybe 50% longer than what ended up airing. But what aired was, you know, pretty representative of what we went through.
Is that the only TV show you've been on, or have you been on others?
No, I've been on a few others. In fact, I've been on another game show, two game shows, in fact, two other game shows. One in China a couple of years ago, where I helped set the course for a challenge type show where there were people who were competing to solve various puzzles. And some of the puzzles related to origami and specifically to some of my designs. So they brought me over to to kind of help with some of that. And then years and years ago, back in the 1990s, I was on a Japanese game show called Naruhodo the World, which is similar to the American show What's My Line, in that they brought out a person, and the celebrity panelists had to ask questions and guess what that person's occupation was. And my occupation, I was an origami artist, and that was a little unusual because I was Western. I wasn't Japanese. But they had to guess. They showed a little video of me folding, and they had to guess what I was folding. And with a lot of hints, they eventually got it.
That's so cool. You have a very interesting career in life. And you live in California currently. And I was looking through your Facebook, and you have photos of all these animals. These animals actually come into your backyard and come up to your window and stuff, like the photo show?
Yeah, most of these photos are, you can see a little bit of the window right here. Uh-huh. Most of the photos are shot either from my desk out the window or from a camera that's mounted just outside my window. My backyard, so to speak, my studio is on the edge of the Angeles National Forest. So my backyard is actually the Angeles National Forest. It's wilderness, you know, starting from my property line and running, you know, 40 miles through the mountains. So I get a lot of wildlife coming in.
Photography, is that another passion that you have, or is it kind of like a hobby?
It's more of a dabbling hobby. I mean, I do it, I enjoy it. But I have no illusions that I'm a particularly good photographer. I'm an okay photographer. Compared to real photographers, professional photographers, I'm way not there. But I'm happy with that. You know, I'm not trying, again, kind of like with the origami, I'm not trying to establish a position in the rankings of photographers. I just do it because I enjoy it. And there's a little bit of a synergy between the animal photography and origami. You know, most of my origami is representational. It's wildlife, folding animals. And it's because I love animals. I get inspired when I see them. Very often, an origami figure is inspired because of some real wildlife sighting that I've seen, or in some cases that I photographed.
That's awesome. I know you have a lot to do, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I just have just one last question for you. If you weren't doing origami full time, what do you think you'd be doing?
Wow. You know, if I hadn't quit my job, I'd probably still be doing laser management. But if we've said, no, you got to rewind all the way back to college and start over in a field. I might have ended up as a mechanical engineer because I really love making physical objects. Uh-huh. And I love mechanisms, things that move and change shape and the like. In the past 10 years or so, a lot of my technical origami work has taken me into the field of mechanical engineering, and it's been a lot of fun. So I might have turned that into a career instead.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time, Robert. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. Hey everyone, thank you for watching. Did you enjoy this conversation? Let me know in the comments section below. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button below to be notified of all my conversations. See you again soon.